listening to the Every Child Can Learn podcast. The podcast is offered to you by Backup Uganda and Brainstart. You can listen to our podcast online on our website www.backupuganda.org. And if you are in Gulu, you can pick up the audios offline from Mega FM, Radio Rupin, Divine Video and Music Library. Head teachers from the district schools can pick these podcasts from the district education office, and head teachers from city schools can pick theirs from the city education office. You can as well pick up the podcast episodes from the following schools: Highland Primary School, Gulu Prison Primary School, Gulu Town Primary School, Mary Immaculate Primary School, St. Joseph's Primary School, or Christ the King Demonstration Primary School. Do you like our podcast? Feel free to share it with your family, friends, and neighbors. The more people learn about learning difficulties, the better we can help our children.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 8 of Every Child Can Learn, the podcast. My name is Anne. I am the co-founder and country director at Backup Uganda. And today I have a very special visitor, or actually I am the visitor,
yeah,
at your school.
Yeah.
And I think he will introduce himself, please.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Thank you, Anne. My name is Eria Paul Njuchi. I'm the founder and executive director of Center for Lifelong Learning.
I think the people who are listening, who listened to the previous episode, will remember Center for Lifelong Learning, because we spoke with Peace, who studies here, and she already explained a few things about the school, but I know, of course, you'll have much more to say. But before we get into all of those things, can you tell me something about yourself? Where are you from? Anything about your background?
Well, Eria Paul is a professional teacher. And I teach for children with intellectual disabilities since 1987.
Wow.
So these are so many years. And in addition, other than being a classroom teacher, I trained to be a teacher educator. And I was employed by the former Institute of Teacher Education in Chambogo in the late 80s, until when Chambogo University had a department for children with special needs, and later on it became an institute of National Institute of Special Education, which is UNICE, where I was appointed a lecturer, and thereafter I was appointed when Chambogo University was merged from Uganda National Institute of Special Education, Uganda Polytechnic Chambogo, and ITEC to form Chambogo University. I was appointed a lecturer.
Okay.
In total, I worked in Chambogo for 25 years.
Wow, that's a nice celebration. I think 25 years.
Yes. Besides teaching, I was researching in special needs education.
Right.
I was the first speech and language specialist in Uganda.
Wow.
And I served as the only contact person for 14 years before a course was written for Makerere University to begin training our speech therapist, Ugandan speech therapist. So today we celebrate because we've got our own speech therapist.
Yeah.
At the time, we used to rely on voluntary service organization personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I come from. And throughout the period, I think I was keen to support teachers in their classroom. And I realized that as a teacher educator, it was important to start a center where I could support the children directly, but also have an opportunity to create a demonstration center where our students who are pursuing special needs education could come and have hands-on experience with the children special.
Yeah, because you've just given me a tour
of
the place.
I've
been very impressed. It's true. It's very inspiring. Yeah.
Thank you.
Before we talk more about that,
yes.
I have two very important questions to ask you. First of all, when you were a child, what did you want to be when you grow up?
I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay. Well, you're wearing a mask, so
yes.
you kind of look like one.
Exactly. So basically, I wanted to become a medical doctor.
Okay.
And more so to be a surgeon. But I was born in a very humble background, in a humble family.
Yeah.
My parents were peasant farmers who could hardly raise school fees. So I was in and out of school because of school fees. But because of my love for studying and becoming a doctor, I persisted.
Mm-hmm.
They could a few times send me home, but I could just not reach home, just stay somewhere.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I go back to school and say, my dad will come tomorrow. Okay.
And I enjoy the lessons.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah. So basically, and I thank God, I was raised by a parent who was very Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in as a choir member from primary 2 up to almost doing my master's, I think. I've been in a choir, so that is my hobby.
I'm learning something new about you today.
Gospel music, yes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then, question number 2, very important. What's your favorite food?
Favorite food? I love ghee nuts with fish.
Okay.
And matoke and pumpkin.
Oh, wow. That's a full plate.
Yeah, that's a full plate.
Sounds very
basically,
tasty.
That's my dish.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Just for everybody to get to know
exactly
who you are beyond your profession.
Yes.
So your area of expertise, you've already talked about it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
In terms of special needs education. And here you focus a lot on dyslexia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I think I was inspired when I did a course for I specialized as a child language and language disability specialist at the University of Newcastle upon Tyne in the UK. So I just reflected on our family. I was born in family of 12, but it's so apparent that it's only me who completed the primary 7. I didn't really understand why. And when they talked about we learned about specific learning disabilities, I reflected on my family. And so I said, wow, if I had known earlier, I would have saved some of my siblings. But it was late because these were adults with the family. But when I got my own children, one of them, a young man called Samuel, is now about 28 years of age. Samuel struggled with reading and writing. Mom was a teacher. My late wife, Jane, was a teacher. So we struggled, both of us, to help someone. But when I did my course, there was a course unit, a small course unit, dyslexia, which was part of a specific language impairment. So it came to me, obviously, that dyslexia, because one of the causes of dyslexia is inheritance.
Yeah, yeah.
So sure. Obviously, I think it is the number one cause of inheritance.
Yeah.
So I realized why my brother struggled
and
why my son was struggling is because of an inherent condition which is specific in nature. That is dyslexia.
Right.
So I became so passionate about it. Because by doing it, I would save my own son, because that was the primary need.
Of course,
then, obviously, save other people.
Yeah.
And this is what I've seen. I've saved thousands
wonderful
to date.
Yeah, and especially from where we are today.
Yeah.
So when you say dyslexia is something that you inherit, that doesn't mean that everybody in the family always has dyslexia, right?
No.
How does that work? Can you explain that?
I think the way genetics works, sometimes we've got dominant genes and recessive genes.
Right.
I would say all of us have it, but at different levels.
Yeah.
Some very mildly,
others
moderately, others severely. So probably my brothers had it maybe moderately, but I think even my son had it moderately because he managed to finish university.
Yeah, oh wow.
He did a practical course, but what I know, dyslexia comes along with gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as we know, because dyslexia is difficult with words, other things that don't concern words, they are perfect. Critical thinking.
Yeah.
Risk-taking in activities, being practical, manipulative skills are wonderful. Because my son, my elder son, is an ICT specialist. Samuel, who struggled, he did print technology at Chamberlain University. And have 3 teachers already. They are wonderful, creative teachers.
Yeah.
I think you have seen Joyce.
Yes,
she's
wonderful. Yeah, I just met her.
Really great. So basically, I think that's what I can say.
It's just good to know how that works, because normally when we say, okay, when you inherit something,
yes.
you may think that it means that every child in every family should have that condition. But
it may
know
be there, but
the
it
case.
Could be very silent
yeah.
within, but it may manifest later
uh-huh.
when you get your own children.
Right. So,
yeah, so
it's
a parent may have
different.
It mildly
yeah.
and the children have it moderately.
Uh-huh.
Or the grandchildren may have it severe.
Right.
But so it depends on how it manifests
yeah.
at that stage.
Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
good to know. So can you tell me a bit more about your school?
My school comes from the current Center for Lifelong Learning.
Yep.
Comes from a pilot project which I did. When I was the only speech therapist in the country,
mm-hmm.
I was overwhelmed with the numbers of children.
Yeah.
I said, how do I continue with this on one-on-one? It was not possible.
Yep.
Then I thought of a model that would serve more children. So I started a center. It used to be called Mukono Integrated Day and Boarding Primary School in Mukono District,
yeah.
where I was for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt by getting a group of teachers, mentor them, we can serve more children at the same goal. Like now I've got 25 teachers in this school.
Mm-hmm.
So we see so many children. We see 80 children on a daily basis. That is not possible in private practice of a clinical
exactly.
speech and language therapist.
Yeah, you can't do that on your own.
You can't. So, and I really, it is still my desire that this is only a model, particularly for government,
mm-hmm.
to benchmark from, to see that maybe other schools can copy lessons. The district education officer recently visited us and said, Paul, I think this is more than a school. I think in the future we're going to gazette it as an educational research center, where teachers come, they study. And one of our 10-year plan is to build a teacher education institution so that this acts as a demonstration.
Yeah.
Our teachers learn in class, but
right.
they have an opportunity to learn and to see children at preschool level, primary school level, secondary school level, and at tertiary level. So this is...
From start to finish.
From start to finish. Because I think we have got a very big problem because of differences in attitudes towards learners who are challenged.
Yeah.
You find that most teachers go with those who can go fast. So this school does not work like that. And I think you can see it from our core motto,
uh-huh.
like success in diversity. Every child matters. Like I've said, you cannot develop this country unless everybody contributes. So I think I've had a chance to interface with the National Curriculum Development Center, which here. We work with the Chamber of University, obviously, is a key in this. Uganda National Examinations Board, we work closely to see that maybe we rethink the way we evaluate our children so that we move up from the traditional subjects of SST, mathematics, and so on, but also see a broader perspective
yeah.
of how we can succeed. Because people who invented things were not schooled.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah,
when
right.
you think about Stone Age,
uh-huh.
people were inventing, this is science, engineering.
Yeah.
But they didn't go to school. So this Center for Lifelong Learning is there to make sure that every child succeeds, particularly those with specific learning impairment. My original training was in mental retardation at the time.
Uh-huh.
Intellectual.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't even call it that.
We don't
anymore,
call it this
do
way.
We?
It's not allowed.
Yeah.
You can't mention it now. So that's how it was in the beginning. But over time, developmental disorders, intellectual impairment,
yeah.
and so on. But learning disabilities, I think, took the big share. But the confusion with learning disabilities, in fact, we are exploring anything about differently abled children. Differently intellectually abled children.
Mm-hmm.
These are children, if you understand them, I think you saw some girls.
Yeah.
Really, really, they would be at the moderate to severe degree of intellectual impairment.
Yeah.
But they are producing works that
uh-huh.
can make them sustain livelihoods.
Yeah. Exactly.
So basically, it's we, the educationists, to perceive them as people can also compete, do what they can do.
Yeah.
Because there are things we can't do. For example, cleaners, you don't need to do complicated chemistry to be a cleaner. But I think work is not segmented in society. We could know that these children are challenged, and you preserve some work for them. Say, if you are doing cleaning, if you are doing laundry, if you are doing mowing of grass, compounds,
yeah.
we save it for these children. Where you focus, those who have got different other abilities, they go and do certain things. But here, somebody may have a Bachelor of Science, probably in electronics,
mm-hmm.
and is a border rider.
Yeah.
So basically, I think we need to shift our thinking. This school is there to demonstrate that in practice.
Mm-hmm.
As I showed you around, we are going to do
yeah.
mechanics. So boys love that, even the girls.
Yeah. I've seen some very impressive girls who are extremely good at such.
Here we don't look at children from, we balance, we don't see gender, we see a human being.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, boys learn to peel and cook food, girls do the same.
Mm-hmm.
All the things, they play football, the girls. So we give them as many opportunities as possible.
That's wonderful.
To be what they are meant to be.
So I have a tricky question for you.
Yeah.
I'm very curious what you think. When we take dyslexia as an example, does that mean that a child with dyslexia can only learn in a special school, according to you?
No.
Okay.
You know, the difference between a special school and a regular school is that a special school has people who are more aware of children's needs. So if we can reach a point where every teacher is aware of these needs, there's no need for special schools.
Right.
For example, immediately mine will become a resource center where people come for very, very specific questions. I don't really desire to run a school forever. But it is here because it's like the only facility around.
Right.
So we need all teachers. We need to improve teacher education in this country. Make sure that the preschool teachers are aware, primary school teachers are aware, secondary school teachers are aware, even post-secondary, even professors. They need to be aware of this while they are conducting their lectures. They should know students are not at the same level. And if we do this, examination malpractice will stop. I've done some studies where it is very clear children cheat exams because they are unconfident. But once you know the answer, why cheat?
Yeah.
Because even cheating, you must be very, very clever not to be caught. Because you get caught and you lose.
You have to be creative.
You have to be very creative. So basically, I think that is that we don't need special schools, but it is a step to the goal of having them be. I think I contribute to the debate of inclusive education. To me, I see inclusive education as a goal, but the process is very different. You need these support structures to make sure that there are centers of excellence where people can benchmark from. At least every school should have. I'm sure in the 90s, there was a proposal that we should have regional centers,
mm-hmm.
even north, south, east, west, and that center should be comprehensive with all impairments and disabilities.
Right, yeah.
But services at a very high level, so that teachers can visit, see what goes on. It's like a teaching hospital.
For teaching.
These regional centers, like this one, should be a teaching center. Its main goal is to demonstrate good practice, not to teach children per se.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know. Thank you for explaining that. So I'm curious, what do you think when we speak of dyslexia, for example, what do you think is the biggest myth that exists?
The biggest myth is that children with dyslexia or learners with dyslexia have low intellectual quotients.
Mm-hmm.
That is big myth.
Uh-huh.
Yet dyslexia is a condition that gives someone a brain that functions differently. I compare this with an automatic car and a manual car. They just use different operating systems, but they are okay if you understand them, teach them the right way,
mm-hmm.
at the right pace. And in fact, most of the giants in the financial world are people with dyslexia. All inventions behind it, you know, inventions, they are great dyslexic people.
Mm-hmm.
Great politicians, they are being dyslexic. Why in the first place? They are high risk takers. They're going to something new. But people with the average brains usually have a tendency to be satisfied with the status quo. They say sit down, they sit, they say don't shout, and so on. But dyslexia will jump that. So I think I'm proud. I'm dyslexic myself.
Oh, yeah?
Just to disclose to you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I thought.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I'm proud to be.
Okay.
Yeah, despite having a background of dyslexia, it has not stopped me.
There you go. Well, you are a very, very good example for people to know
so
that intelligence has nothing to do with it.
And if they want to call me father of dyslexic people in this country, I would like to be.
Thank you for doing that.
Or a clan leader.
For
people with dyslexia. Basically that.
Well, you're doing a wonderful job for everybody. So that just means that the myth that intelligence is related to dyslexia. From now on,
they are not.
We leave it behind.
Exactly.
Good to know.
So they are clever once you understand them.
Uh-huh.
But the basic thing is to avoid the confusion. Because it is possible for other children who have got different other impairments to behave in a similar manner. For example, a child with a general developmental delay may have problems reading and writing because language may be impacted. As long as the impairment is related to language processing, their issues may be related. But obviously, what separates dyslexia from other impairments is the family history. So one of the diagnostic questions that I pose to parents,
mm-hmm.
is there someone in their family who has had symptoms like maybe delayed speech? Because that is a hallmark, delayed speech. It's not always because children with hearing impairment will tend to develop language slowly. But if the sensory processing is fine,
mm-hmm.
but language delays, then dyslexia is likely. And the key hallmark of dyslexia is directionality. That's why people say they reverse letters. Because they have a challenge distinguishing between left and right.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't know whether I go this way or the other way, up, down. That's where they get lost. The 9 becomes the 6 becomes the 9.
Uh-huh.
There's an inversion. They invert letters. They omit.
Right.
So,
like a D becomes a B. A B and
because they,
like
don't,
that,
they move
right?
that way instead of this way.
Yeah.
It is a question of directionality. Yeah. And when you see these kids learning to wear their shoes, it'll always be in the opposite direction.
Uh-huh.
It's because of that.
Yeah.
Those are early warning signs.
It's good to know, yeah. We also know that most children have those challenges in the beginning, right? When they are learning.
Yeah.
So how do you know you have a young child who has that challenge?
Yeah.
How can you tell whether that might be dyslexia or it's just a normal learning process?
I think there are issues with theory of the critical age hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know from a speech therapy background, children must be able to speak their first words, up to 10 words, by their first birthday.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know the exact
10 to 15 words.
Yeah.
Second, by the second birthday, they should always be adding two words together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, combining. Third birthday, at least 3-word level. Me go home. Daddy sleep, bed. Things like that, you should see that, you know, the three.
Yeah.
By 4. Which we think should be the time to go to school,
mm-hmm.
they are speaking simple sentences. But when you see delays that are not explained by lack of ability to sort of the activities of daily living, then dyslexia is highly likely.
Oh, yeah. So it sounds like if someone has dyslexia, then likely they will show the same challenges that most young children show, but for much longer.
For much longer.
Okay.
Obviously, for much longer.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder, when you talk of, maybe we're speaking of dyslexia, but we can speak generally of learning difficulties and learning disabilities.
Yeah.
What is the most surprising thing that you have learned in this area of work over the years? Something where you felt like, wow, I had no idea.
Obviously it surprises me to know, I think what I've learned over the years, because my area of expertise has been diagnosis. And designing interventions,
mm-hmm.
and in teacher education impacting, influencing policy and practice. But what I've learned, dyslexia affects all levels of intellectual profiles.
Okay.
It is possible to have dyslexia when your IQ is low, when your IQ is average, and when it is extremely high.
Oh, yeah. So even when you are gifted, for
example,
you can still have dyslexia.
You can still have it. It doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
Secondly, another surprise, because I knew from many years that, you know, you must be gifted, you must be bright to be dyslexic.
Okay.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It doesn't work that
way.
Uh-huh. In the other, if intervention is provided early,
mm-hmm.
many of the symptoms of dyslexia can be overcome. You may still remain dyslexic, but the symptoms may disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it is these are blunt.
Yeah.
I thought everybody with dyslexia may fail to succeed in school. I supervised a student at the PhD level, doing a PhD, but dyslexic. He was not identified until he was doing his thesis for PhD.
Wow.
And I had to diagnose him.
Okay, so those were some interesting lessons you learned about dyslexia.
And these guys at SPAB, once they learn something, it sticks. It's a very interesting finding. And, they are reliable, people-based. So here, I think it is pleasurable working with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they have a lot of energy. So work is eased with them once you understand them. But obviously, I've learned that dyslexia never goes alone. The comorbidity, the other condition that occur with it are enormous, particularly the attention deficit disorder.
Yeah. And I think people who have been listening to previous episodes have learned about it, ABD and ADHD.
Which is great. So there's no single therapy. You need a combination of therapies to teach them. Teachers alone, they cannot manage. So we need to work in a multidisciplinary fashion if we are to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think that we need to work, it is like long term.
Yeah.
The school system in Uganda doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Largely they see the teacher as the master planner. So we need people from other fields to be part and parcel of the school system.
Yeah.
Social workers are needed to work with the families, acceptance, talking to moms, because the teacher may be overstretched if you expect a teacher to visit every other home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think this is something also that is critical to success. Parents are so important, parents' education. Here, every time we must run a seminar for the parents. Why we have succeeded? Because that is one of the things. And I don't have problems with paying school fees because I've got a direct contact with the parents.
Right.
I speak to them. We collect about 95% fees every time.
Wow, that's a very, very high rate compared to other schools in Uganda, right?
Yeah. So the 5% is understandable, obviously. So I think that communication with the parents is critical.
Mm-hmm.
Involvement of other professionals outside the teaching, particularly psychiatrists, do a wonderful job. About 40% of my children see psychiatrists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the emotional stability.
Right, because it's not easy, right? Living and learning with we're talking of dyslexia, but generally with any kind of disability.
Exactly.
It affects other things than the learning, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So sometimes we over-focus on the learning in class, but there are other stresses around the child that must also be focused.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what do you think, we're speaking of parents, what do you think the best thing that parents can do would be for their children if they find out that their child has dyslexia?
Mm-hmm. First and foremost is acceptance. Parents, obviously, everybody wants their best. Why? I think parents have a tendency to compare this child with the dyslexia with the so-called ordinary.
Yeah.
And this is wrong. Because in a family, as we shared before, you may have that all children are dyslexic, mainstream. Why? Because parents are dyslexic in most of the time. Because I can't be dyslexic unless my dad or mom is dyslexic.
Yeah.
So they tend to blame the child
right.
instead of appreciating that maybe partly I contributed.
Without intending.
Exactly. Nobody intended. Nobody applied for it.
Yeah.
So that acceptance is critical. They need to accept and give every support that the child needs, but keep the child in school as much as possible. Failing mathematics, failing subjects should not be a reason to withdraw a child from school.
Okay.
So explore advice. Every day I get a parent, they say, no, I was Googling to find out what is available in this country. So these days with the available technology, I think parents can find the answers. They can find who can help.
Yeah.
Like NGOs are starting, like, you know, Backup Uganda, SWAMI, Special Needs Quality Assurance and Monitoring Initiative. I'm sure it is new on the market and it is going to create a big impact.
Hopefully, yeah.
It will draw expertise and the parents find it in one stop. You find a speech therapist, occupational therapist, a special needs teacher, general teachers, good teachers. In fact, it's when we can open up even to ordinary teachers who have excelled in their practice.
Right, so that it becomes very easy to find out what to do next.
Exactly.
The next steps.
Well.
Yeah. What would you think? What would you advise parents when they, when okay, maybe they've listened to this episode, and they think, wow, this sounds so familiar. I think my child or maybe children might be dealing with this as well. What do I do next?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think to, government is planning to revamp the former education assessment and resource services. So once these take shape, I think they are in the new policy. I think it's going to become a policy issue that every district has a center where children can be assessed.
Right. Okay. So they don't have to come.
They don't have to come from Gulu, Kampala, Kabale. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
Within their local setting. And the teacher education is going to improve so that by the time you graduate, at least you can identify a child. So it will be reassuring to the parent to go to that school, because parents are the first to see the warning signs.
Yeah, exactly.
Even not to the teachers. When you have parents' interviews, they will tell you, I saw this baby when in kindergarten. So I think the collaboration between the parent and the teacher and any other, obviously it will be a requirement if you're in an inclusive school, you should know something about inclusive education. So I encourage parents just to seek knowledge about the condition and look at what is within the community already, because I know it can be expensive, even traveling, because we want to target even churches. If we have got inclusion coordinators at almost a village level, it may be a good dream, but I think we should work toward it. We start, obviously, government may start at a district as a unit. We may have a built facility where at least the district is easier to connect to. You need, like, if I'm moving from here to Kampala, maybe 3,000, 7,000 or 10,000. I know family, some families may be poor. But there will be organized society, parents getting together with others.
Yeah.
I know there are mothers' unions. I think these are subjects to be discussed at that level of mothers' union. So they get a focal person at the mothers' union about a child with maybe dyslexia. And say if your child, you see the warning signs, leaflets should be available in local languages and radio, local radios, like you are doing here. Once a parent knows that maybe my child has this condition, we go to that dyslexia service coordinator within the setting, then that will be making the appropriate referral.
Right, so that they get to the right people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's helpful. So I hope everybody who is listening and who thinks, hey, I have heard this before, I have, or I've seen this before in my children, or even with yourself, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Adults are there, as we've just heard.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, to follow that advice. So maybe to wrap up, I'm very curious, because I've met some of your students. Of course, Peace is one of your students.
Yes.
I spoke with her, learned a lot from her.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could share an example of a success story. You don't have to include names, that's okay.
Privacy is important. I've got a young man who was referred by a class teacher maybe 15 years ago now. That boy was struggling with his spellings. So it was a mainstream private primary school. He was identified by class teacher. So I talked to the head teacher. Head teacher spoke to a colleague. They had a head teacher's meeting. I said, we know someone. By then, Mr. Njuchi, they called me Mr. Njuchi, Ria Paul. I didn't have a doctorate at the time. And I was working at Chambogo University. So they came over to me. I did the assessment and I confirmed that young man had dyslexia. And we looked around. Parents were willing to do anything within their reach to make sure that their son succeeds. Because already in the family, other siblings had succeeded. So they were wondered why this was a problem. So they came to me. And what we had to do was to put the child in a special institution. That was the former Mukono Integrated Deaf Boarding Primary School in Mukono. So we started P6 and P7. And we passed with the first grade. So that boy, when he was with us, he demonstrated he was very talented, athletic. So at the time, I remember we went to Nambole Stadium and he matched with a gold medal in a high jump.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So we were stars, and obviously he traveled to Shanghai, China.
Wow, he did.
He was the first in his family to fly in a plane. Wow. So it was amazing. Wonderful. As we speak now, he works for a big organization and he's the coordinator of the sports, you know, in this country. He's a very proud man and he's impacting many young people. Going to speak to them about school, about sports, about being assertive in community. And he's aspiring right now. He finished his Bachelor of Social Work from Chambogo University and is aspiring to become a Member of Parliament.
That's
so
right.
I can consider that one a success story because
yeah.
It was, you know, I was there directly, both in the class and outside,
yeah.
Supporting him, working with the family closely. And I think the family can share testimony about this. If we had the number, you speak to the mom.
Mm-hmm.
She would be happy telling you the journey.
That's amazing. Thank
yeah.
you for the good work.
So there are so many of the kind. I
yeah.
think some Kenyan. One is in Nairobi. She qualified recently with a degree in exterior design.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Exterior design. So she designs compounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big hotels like the Sheraton type. Yeah.
That's impressive.
So
that just goes to say that we really can't miss out on their talents, right?
Yeah.
Of people with dyslexia or any other kind of
learning disability. I think every school that accommodates children with dyslexia should create a talents program.
Yeah.
So that the talents are used as motivators. For the challenging aspect. So talents are so critical. Like here, on a Wednesday, we don't go to class. It is a talents day.
Okay.
We come with our gumboots, we come with our knives, we come with the materials, we go around, the porters are making, you have seen the art room.
Yeah.
Everybody
absolutely.
So it is an industrial day. And I've said to teacher education institutions, until they put a day for practice,
mm-hmm.
it will never happen. Because people want to do the easiest thing. The easiest thing is to talk.
Mm-hmm.
With chalk. So, but if you program that this Tuesday is meant for practice, everybody will be committed to that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we need to put it as a core. And UNEP should revise the way they assess these children. Project worker should be a major part. Because they may fail to express themselves on paper, but when they use their hands, you can see how intelligent they are. So we need to change the assessment.
Yeah, so it's not just about the standard academics.
No.
Wow, thank you so much. I think I have learned a lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things you told me that I didn't know, and I love that.
Thank
and
you.
I hope everybody who listens to this will learn the same. Thank you for having me at your school. I'm so impressed.
Thanks
for the great work you're doing here.
Thank you.
And I think we'll leave it at that for today.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thank
Very
you so
grateful.
Much. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Every Child Can Learn. Please share your thoughts with us. Join the conversation on Facebook or send your questions to 0772-630078. Do you want to learn more about Backup Uganda and stay updated about our activities? Check our website on www.backupuganda.org and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.